Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Yesterday, we were talking about the essay found on LDS.org, an essay titled First Vision Accounts. It is one of several essays that the church has been posting to explain its history and doctrine. And I have to say that even though it's supposed to be an effort of transparency on the church's part, as I gave a talk a while back, if it's really a work in transparency, it's at best opaque. And what I mean by that is many times these essays try to dispel a myth by inventing a new myth. And I think in this paper, we will find certainly some examples of that. But the first vision, as I mentioned yesterday, is really absolutely essential to a Mormon's salvation. Eric, you have a statement there that was in the church news by F. Burton Howard. What did he say?
Yeah, this is from May 7, 2005, and he said, "Our own personal salvation depends upon whether we accept and have a testimony of what Joseph Smith saw and heard in the spring of 1820.
So it has to be in the spring of 1820. It has to be something that he actually saw and heard. And in this First Vision Account essay, this is how it starts off. Joseph Smith recorded that God the Father and Jesus Christ appeared to him in a grove of trees near his parents' home in western New York State when he was about 14 years old. Now, when you read that statement, it can be a little bit confusing. If I didn't know anything about this story at all, I could almost gather from this sentence that Smith recorded it when he was about 14 years old. Let's go back and look at it. Joseph Smith recorded that God the Father and Jesus Christ appeared to him in a grove of trees near his parents' home in western New York State when he was about 14 years old.
Now, that could be taken either way, I suppose, depending
on,
you know, who reads it and the interpretation it's given. And I think that could be possibly be on purpose, because a general reader would think, oh, this has been since he was 14 years of age. It was recorded, but we need to know, the audience needs to know, that nothing from Joseph's pen ever comes down until 1832. That's an account he gives in his diary.
And nobody even knows about that for years later on.
That's 12 years later.
Yeah, clear into the middle of the 20th century, nobody even knows about this, this account that was written in his diary where he talks about the Lord appearing to him in 1832. Anyway, not to belabor that, but I just found that the sentence structure was kind of interesting in there. It doesn't really make it all that clear. Maybe they're assuming that by the time you read this whole account and maybe look at some of the footnotes, that might be clarified. But anyway, concerned by his sins and unsure which spiritual path to follow, Joseph sought guidance by attending meetings, reading scripture, and praying. In answer, he received a heavenly manifestation. Joseph shared and documented the first vision as it came to be known on multiple occasions. He wrote or assigned scribes to write four different accounts of the vision. So here we have heavenly manifestations. The question, of course, that needs to be asked is these heavenly manifestations. Was Joseph Smith actually looking at a physical appearance of God the Father in Jesus, or was it really a spiritual manifestation, what we would really understand to be more in line with the traditional understanding of a vision? We're going to talk about that in this series. But going on, what does it say in the second paragraph?
Joseph Smith published two accounts of the first vision during his lifetime. The first of these, known today as Joseph Smith History, was canonized in the Pearl of Great Price and thus became the best-known account. The two unpublished accounts, recorded in Joseph Smith's earliest autobiography in a later journal, were generally forgotten until historians working for The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints rediscovered and published them in the 1960s. Since that time, these documents have been discussed repeatedly in church magazines, in works printed in church-owned and church-affiliated presses, and by Latter-day Saint scholars and other venues. In addition to the first-hand accounts, there are also five descriptions of Joseph Smith's vision recorded by his contemporaries.
Well, in that statement alone, they're telling you that you're going to have a number of different accounts of this. When we look at the different accounts, we certainly do find some discrepancies. Now, the Mormon would argue that these so-called discrepancies are probably no more serious than the differences in the accounts that we find in the gospel. Would you agree?
Well, yeah. I mean, one account says that there were two angels at the tomb, and another says there was one angel. And many critics like to point to something like that and say, so what was it, one or two? But these apparent contradictions can be determined on differing accounts, perspectives of the people that were seeing them. And so the rule of thumb with that is wherever you have two angels, there will always be one. And so if the one person wants to emphasize one angel and the other decides to bring in both of them, they both can be correct. It doesn't have to be contradictory in that sense when you have different perspectives.
But would you say when we look at the different accounts of the first vision that we find some discrepancies that are hard to reconcile? I mean, it would be very difficult to reconcile some of the discrepancies in here, especially when you have, for instance, no mention whatsoever of God the Father and only Jesus showing up. The Lord shows up, like in his 1832 account. He goes merely to find out whether or not his sins are forgiven. It's only the Lord that shows up. I guess what seems hard for me is the big deal about the first vision is that both God the Father and Jesus show up, and thus gives the Mormon leadership this idea that somehow in the Godhead they are two separate, distinct gods. If you don't have God the Father showing up, and it's just a vision like anybody else can have a vision of Jesus, and there's been a number of people that have had alleged visions of Jesus, Mormons don't take them all that seriously. From what I understand, many of those who convert out of Islam do so because they had a dream or a vision of Jesus. That wouldn't seem to be that big of a deal, but the fact that God the Father shows up seems to be the big deal. Now, of course, we would have a problem with that because Exodus 33:20 says that basically no man can see God and live, and of course, Joseph Smith allegedly, after seeing this, he lives to tell the tale. How does he do that?
And the problem that we have here is that, yes, there are these accounts that you're talking about, but if they differ in such different ways, in such varying ways, you're going to have a problem, because when the police investigate any kind of an incident and they start interviewing the people around and you start getting a variety of stories that are so different that they're going to have to determine where is there any similarity here. But when you have God the Father by himself, or Jesus by himself, or angels, or whatever that these different accounts were saying there were at the first vision, we have a definite problem, I think. And the fact too, Bill, is that this was not information that was around during the full first decade of the church plus.
Oh, plus, easily. I mean, he doesn't come around with the generally accepted account, the one they talk about that's in Joseph Smith history. They admit it was canonized in the Pearl of Great Price, and this became the best-known account. Well, that's because it was canonized in 1880 is when it was put into the Pearl of Great Price. And, of course, it would be the best-known account because that's the one everybody's going to be given when they buy a copy of the standard works. They're not going to see all these other accounts. They're not going to know about them.
Mormon historian James B. Allen concedes that the first vision narrative, as it's understood today by Latter-day Saints, and if you're a Latter-day Saint, you know the first vision. This is something that everybody knows, but it's suspiciously absent for much of Mormonism's early history, because this is what he wrote in 1966 in Dialogue, a Journal of Mormon Thought. He said, according to Joseph Smith, he told the story of the vision immediately after it happened in the early spring of 1820. As a result, he said, he received immediate criticism in the community. There is little, if any, evidence, however, that by the early 1830s, Joseph Smith was telling the story in public. At least if he were telling it, no one seemed to consider it important enough to have recorded it at the time, and no one was criticizing him for it. Not even in his own history did Joseph Smith mention being criticized in this period for telling the story of the first vision. The interest, rather, was in the Book of Mormon and the various angelic visitations connected with its origin. He went on pages 30 and 31 and said that none of the available contemporary writings about Joseph Smith in the 1830s, none of the publications of the church in that decade, and no contemporary journal or correspondence yet discovered mentions the story of the first vision. It's convincing evidence that at best it received only limited circulation in those early days.
If at best it received only limited circulation, I would say I would like to hear some evidence even to support that statement. Because if it's not being told at all, nobody seems to know about it. Joseph Smith doesn't seem to be talking about it. No one seems to be criticizing it. Where do you get the at best?
And there were critics. Let's not be ignorant on that. I mean, Alexander Campbell, E.D. Howe, Ezra Booth, John Corll, and J.B. Turner, all of them were critics. But they were critics over the Book of Mormon, not the first vision. Why? If they had known about this first vision, they would have certainly criticized this, but not one peep out of any of those critics about the first vision.
And why do we know that they would have criticized the story of the first vision? Because it's being criticized after it's being publicized publicly. Almost immediately, they're starting to find out, hey, we don't agree with that. I don't think that really happened. And so that event in Mormon history, that alleged event in Mormon history, is starting to be challenged as it's been challenged down to this very day. What we are doing right now, I think, would show that if that story had been around back then, it would be just as criticized as it is being criticized today and should be criticized. Unfortunately, most Mormons don't even know the whole story of how this first vision account came into being. I think most Mormons probably assume that the first vision account was always a part of the Mormon narrative. As important as it is to them today, because it's one of the first things you learn about Joseph Smith, is the fact that he had this visitation by God the Father and Jesus.
If you're doubting any of this, you need to keep listening to our shows. If you're a Latter-day Saint who realizes how important this first vision narrative is, we're going to deal more with this and I think explain in a definitive way that the first vision could not have happened the way that Joseph Smith says it did.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. How would you like to have Mormonism Research Ministry address your church on the subject of Mormonism? MRM's Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson have spoken at many Christian churches all over the country. You see, they can tailor their presentation to meet your church's needs. Anything from a one-day basic introduction to a weekend symposium. You'll find these PowerPoint presentations clear, articulate, and presented in a Christ-honoring fashion. So let your pastor know today that you'd like to have MRM speak at your church. Write us at contact@mrm.org. Have you considered visiting the Holy Land? Well, in February 2015, Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson are hosting a trip to Israel with the option to visit the seven churches of Revelation in Turkey. During our 11-day trip to Israel, former Utah pastor Joel Kramer will take us on a day to see important biblical sites where very few people go. We'll also have a chance to swim in the Dead Sea, get baptized in the Jordan River, and hike through Hezekiah's Tunnel. To find out more, visit MRM.org and click on the Israel icon on the top right-hand corner of the page. Again, that's MRM.org.